Hi, and welcome to Katie Piper's Extraordinary People, the podcast where I sit down with someone who's lived a truly extraordinary life. My guest in this episode is writer, public speaker, and role model for so many, Stephanie Yeboah. Having been a writer for the past 11 years, she really got people's attention when she wrote a piece called I Found Out the Guy I Was Dating Did It for a Dare. Yep, you heard that correctly. But Stephanie's having the last laugh, because she just got herself a book deal. Fatally Ever After is out next month on the 3rd of September, and it's all about reframing how we think about our bodies. And she joins me now to tell me more about it. Hello.
Hello.
It's really cool to have you here. In the lead up to this episode, I kind of listened to lots of different interviews of you and had a good old stalk of you online. And I suppose, like, to look at us both, you would think, well, what actually would we have in common in our lives? You know, we've led different lives, but lots of the things I saw you quoted as saying have been some of my lived experiences as well. And I feel like you're a known person, but you're not conforming to, like, traditionally when we see people in the media, they have to conform to a certain brand. Yes. And act a certain way to sell product or to sell books. And you have a book deal, so you are commercial, but you don't seem to be kind of, you don't have any like facade to make money. You just seem to be authentically you. And I think that's quite hard.
Oh, thank you. I mean, it's a funny one because I still feel as if I think sometimes when you're on social media and you speak to like the same 30 people every day, I kind of have that echo chamber. And so I constantly forget that there are loads of people listening to things I say and watching what I do, which is why sometimes when I go on rants about, you know, talking about like dating or saying something really gross, and sometimes my friends are like, Steph, there are loads of people who can see that. And I'm like, I just like to talk a lot, and I always try to stand up for what is right, regardless of if it is good or bad, or whether I'm working with a brand, whatever the case is. I'm very strong on my integrity, and so it's not something that I would ever want to cover up for the sake of personal branding, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting because you think, like, when you look at Instagram now, I mean, it's a brilliant thing, particularly for women, because now we're becoming empowered where if we want to work at home, if we want to have families, whatever we want to do, we can still be business women and we can make money on platforms. And if we have activist interests or things we're passionate about, we can also showcase them. But it does mean wearing lots of different hats. And, you know, sometimes as you become more popular and more commercial, you might have people telling you, well, that doesn't align with a certain brand. You can't really have that opinion. If you do, please don't express it. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult because, you know, an inspirational person is also a kind of boss and entrepreneur. So you do have to sometimes align with something. But if your whole cause comes from this activism, like you said, you want to be true to your message. Is it something that you struggle with the more popular and known you've become?
I think so. I mean, there have been cases where I have been asked to work with some brands whose values I don't particularly align with. And I think when it comes to those kinds of things, because there are so many different avenues that I talk about in regards to body politics and social justice issues, I have to be very careful about who I choose to work with or who I choose to represent. And, you know, for example, one good recent example, I guess, is with Instagram. So I was supposed to be doing some work with Instagram. However, over the past couple of weeks, there have been instances where they have started, let me throw in an allegedly here, just in case.
We don't want that lawsuit.
Exactly. There have been instances where they have been allegedly censoring and blocking and deleting images of plus size Black women while leaving images of scantily clad, slim white women who may be doing the same poses. And I have a real issue with that because it happened to me this week. And so it's a case of me now having that discussion with Instagram to say, look, I can't take part in the work that you want me to do because you are censoring me and women that look like me. And so I have to be very strict with my I don't want to say morals, but I guess the ethos that I try and promote, I always try and make sure that brands are on the same wavelength as me. Because I think for me personally, you know, I wouldn't feel right taking part in something that I don't at the core believe in or like. So I think as my platform has begun to increase, I think I've become really good at saying no as well. Because back in the day, I would have probably said yes to everything so I could curry favor with brands and things. But now it's like I'm at a position where I'm able to sort of stand my ground.
And do you think that's a reflection of you're more successful, more comfortable? Like, I mean, you know, money wise, opportunity wise, or do you think it's a representation of growth and self-esteem?
I think it's definitely growth and self-esteem, because I think we all do at some point in our lives suffer with really bad imposter syndrome. And so when I was younger and when I started out blogging, I definitely was at a point where I didn't feel as if my writing was good enough or the content that I was making was good enough. And so in an effort to prove to myself and others that I could keep up, I found myself saying yes to, you know, brands that I would normally like never work with. Like, so for instance, for me, I don't really drink, but then I started doing some work with like some alcohol brands, and it just didn't fit in with what I was doing at the time. And that was because I had such low self-esteem regarding my writing and the quality of my writing. But I think definitely as I started to write a lot more on my blog about the issues that are important to me, I started to gain a lot more confidence in that area.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And so it's gotten to a point now where, you know, I feel like I'm still on that road to in terms of like financial stuff. Like I still feel like I'm slowly getting there. I don't feel like I've made it in any kind of a way, shape or form at all. But it's just a case of sticking to what I feel aligns with me. And so because I exist as somebody within so many different intersections that are affected by everyday things, I just have to be really careful, you know, and go through the vetting process. So, you know, is this brand fatphobic? Are they colorist? Are they racist? Are they this? Are they that? Are they sustainable? All of these different things, because it can be a minefield out there.
And exhausting as well.
Oh, so exhausting. So exhausting. Yeah.
What social does for us is it allows us to connect and do all these things that you're talking about. And it allows us to put pressure on brands to change.
Yes.
Because, you know, it kind of like, I feel like, yes, in the past, they would have had to tick a small diversity box, a token effort. Whereas if now people are going out there first before the brand and getting a good reaction, getting followers, you know, people are like, we want this. This is what we want. And they're engaging first. And then the brand jumps in afterwards because they see, oh, it is populist. We never would have taken that risk.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of reverse now, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think there has been Instagram and other social media sites have really brought in this huge activism change. I think, you know, with the rise of the body positivity community and the body neutrality, fat acceptance communities, all of these communities that promote different body shapes and our uniqueness, what we found is that a lot of us we're not being able to go in through the front door. So we are creating our own avenues. We're going through the windows. We're creating our own opportunities because of this lack of representation. And so I think brands are really starting to see our worth in that, see how hard we are willing to work, and seeing the engagement and how viral some of these images and videos are going, they're seeing that there is a huge need for diversity and inclusivity and just uniqueness in the things that they're trying to promote, whether it be a product or an idea. And so, yeah, it's funny how it's kind of like turned on its head now. Like, we are almost doing most of the work for them in regards to, I guess, casting and producing the content.
We talked a lot about brands and almost kind of like the work side, but another side I really wanted to explore with you is, you know, the dating side, you know, partners. I mean, I'm married now, but I had a very long journey to getting married. And I suppose one of the things that I feel really happy about with this platform and social is that we're normalizing seeing all kinds of people. And actually, we only really are attracted to what we see all the time and what is seen as desirable and acceptable. And if it's not in our movies and our books and all our literature and stuff, then it is shocking. You know, for me, when I would date people, they would be shocked by my appearance. They would be shocked if they then saw me naked and saw other stuff I'm not used to seeing. And it was a real difficulty for me. And even now, I really like being authentic online, because then when I meet new people, I feel like I've preempted it. Mm-hmm. And if they have gone and looked at my IG, they've seen me at home, no makeup, they've seen me in different environments. And actually that helps me personally from a selfish point of view. Mm-hmm. And I think if I was raising a daughter with a disfigurement like me, I would always advise her to put herself out there in that way. You've wrote in depth about your dating experiences, but for people that haven't read some of your writing, tell me what dating's been like for you.
Dating has been a cesspit of fuckery for me.
Great opening line. This is the quote. This is going to be the ad on IG when this goes live.
It has been absolutely terrible. Oh, I mean, where do I even start? Okay, so...
What's your status now?
Oh, single. There has been absolutely no change. I think... So I was very late to the whole dating thing, because when I was at school, I was bullied very badly. And so I became a bit of a recluse, very, very shy, introverted, didn't speak to anybody. And so I didn't go out, didn't have a social life.
Bullied by who? Everyone? Girls? Boys? Like what? Who?
Oh, I was bullied by a gang of five boys who were in my year and then the year above me. And a lot of that bullying was mostly physical stuff. So it was very much, you know, what were they doing? They were like throwing stones at me and beating me up and strangling me. I had acid thrown on my neck in science. So like my neck is a different color to the rest of my body. Mm-hmm. It was just extremely traumatic, and mm-hmm. it almost gave me like a fear of boys and men, because I just had felt at that point that all the guys that had come into my life or that I knew ended up leaving me with some kind of trauma.
Were you supported by anyone then? Did you confide in anyone or?
Oh no, I didn't tell a soul that I was getting bullied. I internalized it definitely. And that led to really self-destructive behavior such as self-harm and being diagnosed with depression. And I remember when I was 15, actually, it was getting too much. And my mum was away traveling for work. And I remember telling my dad that I was getting bullied. And the first thing he said was, well, if you weren't so fat, then you wouldn't have gotten bullied. And I think that is something that has stayed with me my whole life, because I remember I was such a daddy's girl. And as soon as I started getting bigger, my dad started to get more distant and colder and fat shamey. And so it's interesting now that I feel very confident in all aspects of my life. But when it comes to men, I revert back to that 14-year-old girl that is desperate for attention.
Do you have a relationship with your dad now?
Oh yeah, I do now. I do now. And we've never really chatted about that. I don't know. He's very like typical Aries, just argumentative and hard headed. And I just can't be bothered to kind of like go down that road. So we're amicable. But in regards to dating, I mean, I had my first ever relationship, sort of my first kiss boyfriend, lost my virginity and relationship at the age of 25. And that was my first and only boyfriend. And he ended up, you know, ending the relationship because he thought that I wasn't the right type of plus size for him.
What does that mean?
So he liked hourglass shaped. He liked the acceptable fat shape. Mm-hmm. So that's the small waist, big hips, big boobs, big bum, flat stomach. And ever since then, I think my dating life has kind of just gone from bad to worse. Mm-hmm. So it's ranged from going on dates with guys, and as I approach them, they have said, oh, sorry, you're too fat for me, you're too big for me, I don't think I can continue on this date. That's happened about 4 times.
Face to face,
like, yeah, where they've been like, I can't do this. Even though,
and
I
how
always
do you deal with that though?
I don't know. There used to be a point where it really used to get to me, because I think when you're so used to being rejected for how you look, it definitely can leave a long lasting impact on your self-esteem. And so I went through this period of constantly having to rebuild myself back together after suffering another rejection. Mm-hmm. I had worked so hard to get to a point where I could say that I love my body. I didn't want to go down that rabbit hole of having to change how I looked in order to be found attractive by a man. But there are definitely times when I do think, even now, like, is this the reason why, you know, I'm not found attractive by guys? You know, I've been on dates where I found the guy's Twitter and, you know, followed him, but he didn't know that I was following him. And when he went to the bathroom, I was just scrolling down my Twitter and I saw that he had been live tweeting the whole date and telling his followers that I was, you know, really fat and unattractive, but he was still going to try and have sex with me anyway, just to see what it's like to have sex with a fat girl.
Oh my God.
And yeah,
I can't believe this is your lived experience. This is like not, I can't fathom that this is real.
Yeah, it's horrible. And so I remember with that one, as soon as he came back from the bathroom, I showed him, you know, the tweets, and then I left. And you know,
did he try and apologize?
He laughed it off as if it was a joke. And I think that's what kind of made it worse, because I think sometimes when you do look different, people assume that you don't have feelings, or they dehumanize you to the point where they think, you know, I don't owe this person any kind of respect or care because of how grotesque they look. There was the infamous date where I went on a couple of dates with a guy and didn't hear back from him again afterwards. And I just thought, okay, fine, kind of forgot about him after a while. And then I received an email from his friend, who went on to tell me that the reason that I hadn't heard back from the guy was because they had dared him to go on a date with a fat girl, or go on dates with a fat girl. And he ended up winning £300 because he won the bet. And yeah, I remember in that time I was just like, is this it moving forward? Mm-hmm. Is this all I'm worth? I've never had, you know, any kind of successful date. And I think sometimes when you add into the include, you know, being plus size is already a thing in itself when it comes to body politics and desirability. But when you then add in my race, mm-hmm. and the fact that I'm darker skinned, it becomes a lot more of a complex issue. So that's where fetishization. Yeah. So that's where that comes in. And so when it comes to online dating, my DMs are just full of men being disgusting, you know, about my race and attributing my fatness and my blackness to stereotypes that they have seen via porn websites and movies. Right. You know, I'm aggressive and I'm dominant, feral, you know, all of these really horrible stereotypes that a lot of black women and plus size black women unfortunately are given. And yes, it's just a bit of a mess, my love life. It's terrible.
but it's interesting because, like, you telling these stories, you know, it's so inhumane and it's a horrible side to see to humanity. And, you know, it makes you want to feel like, well, who gave these guys this concept that they're so perfect and desirable? You know, and it's really hard to hear people being treated so cruelly. But I suppose this is what makes you extraordinary, is that's a dark journey to go on, and it could drive lots of different people to lots of different things. But it's driven you to a very successful career. You know, I mean, you're very articulate, very intelligent. And from that date that you just spoke about was, you know, born the piece that you wrote. And now here we are discussing your book that's coming out in September. I mean, there are people listening to this that probably don't really have that mindset and don't know how to turn those things around and make adversity their triumph. You know, how did you do that? Because there's still emotion, there's still rawness to you talking about this. You know, this is still real and it still feels bad whether you've got a book deal or not.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't say that this might be really bad to admit, but I think a part of it comes from just sheer pettiness. So I went through all of these emotions, but then afterwards I was like, well, if he's going to make £300 off of this day, I'm going to do the same thing by writing about it. So
she's that kind of petty.
Oh, I was that kind of petty. I was like, okay, cool. We're both going to make some money out of this then. And so that's kind of how it started. I think it's such an emotional thing to process, sort of going through life knowing that the reason that, you know, you're single is because of society's very narrow-minded westernized standard of beauty.
Yeah, it's true. It's the truth. That's the thing. Because I mean, I've seen it myself. Like, as I healed and became more acceptable, I gained more male attention, and it was zero when I had a bright purple face, shaved head, plastic mask. You know, it was not just zero, but it was also offensive and people saying stuff to me. So, you know, I understand when people try to comfort you and say things to build you up, but it's kind of not true. So it doesn't really build you up, because then you can't really trust anyone if everyone's going to patronize you.
Exactly.
And I, you know, I've had similar dates. I remember I went for a date of this guy. So I would go through a pattern of only getting approached by people when they were drunk and in like low lighting, dark bars in the evening, because I was kind of acceptable in that environment, like bright blonde hair, slim, and it's dark and people are drunk, so they couldn't really see anything else. Then you'd swap numbers, and the way they would be texting you, you'd know they don't really remember you properly. Which was always nerve-wracking, because it's kind of like, you know, they're going to be also shocked when they actually see you for a daytime lunch date. And I had one guy, we went to a really upmarket like sushi place, sat down, and he was all twitchy and sweaty and weird. And I was like, why is he all twitchy? He don't want to be here. And we just had drinks. But you know, and it's like a place where the drink's £15 for the drink.
Yes, yeah.
So we had like the drinks, and then they brought the menu out to order the food. We were supposed to be having like lunch together. And he was like, I'm going to go to the loo. And then he left and he never came back. But I waited ages telling myself, oh, maybe he's got diarrhea, or maybe he's like, injecting insulin or something in the loos or something. And then I waited and waited. And it was like, I wasn't that established in my career. I didn't have a lot of money. So I was like, oh my God, it's a big drinks bill. I don't even know if my card's going to decline. And then he just ghosted me. You know, he never texted me explanation of why. And then the pattern would just repeat all the time. Like, you know, say I'd get into text conversations, people I'd meet out drunk, they'd be like, what do you do for a living? So I would just say, oh, I work for a charity, just admin for a charity. And then they say, any charity I'd have heard of? And I'm like, no, it's like this small burns charity, Katie Pipe Foundation. And then the guy tips back, oh, have you ever met Katie? And I was like, well, I am, that's me.
What?
And then that was it. He never, and we've been texting for 2 months every night, good night, good morning. And then that was it. He just ghosted me and never an explanation again. So it really confirmed for me what you're saying of, I don't have low self-esteem, but I know as a fact, it is an issue for a lot of people if you don't look like society's ideal standards of beauty.
Absolutely.
Also from Something Else.
How did we get here? With Claudia Winkleman and Professor Tanya Byron. In these in-depth one-on-one therapy sessions, we dig deep into personal stories with fascinating and emotional revelations. A passionate, insightful, and moving experience with clear outcomes to each episode.
He is as anxious about attachment with you as you are with him.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. That's crazy, isn't it? Oh, that's a weird feeling. Wait, so... God. Don't you just feel like, whoa, why didn't I know that all along?
Listen now in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all good podcast apps.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
You may have heard of the podcast Juicy Scoop. Wondered what it is? Why aren't you listening? Well, I'm its host. Created it, been doing it for 7 years. I'm Heather McDonald of Juicy Scoop with Heather McDonald. Now, I could tell you why you should be listening to my show, but my listeners wanted to write the ad for me, and here are some of the things they said. Not your regular Juicy podcast. Catch up on all the juicy topics from Hollywood and pop culture to true crime and beyond. Heather McDonald's Juicy Scoop always has great guests, great laughs, and great gossip. It's a comedian's take on the hottest headlines. Juicy Scoop is the pop culture news you want to hear. No BS, no filter, no filler. Raw, real, and in the moment. Throw in the hilarity of amazing comedians that you will instantly be obsessed with, a juicy crime story, and a dash of normal life in LA moments, and you've got yourself an amazing week of Juicy Scoop. 2 episodes every week, every Tuesday and Thursday. It will never let you down.
One of the things I really admire about you is that you do something you believe in, that you're passionate about. And I just wondered, you know, you touched on school was a difficult time of bullying, but this kind of career path you've taken in adult life, you know, would you have even known it existed at school? What did you want to be when you grew up? What were your aspirations?
Gosh, I mean, I would never... This is an absolute dream. I guess it's such a dream. I don't even know how to like articulate it. It's such a dream for me because I never would have thought I would ever have been on this path. Growing up, I think coming from a very traditional West African background, it was always instilled in me that I had to do something academic. So whether it was business, you know, law, accounting, medicine, those kinds of things. And I went down the route of doing law because it was the only thing at the time that I somewhat enjoyed. I didn't really know what I enjoyed, what I didn't. And so I did law for my A-levels and then I studied it at university and finished it. And when I finished, I didn't know what I wanted to do because I had to tell my parents, you know, I actually don't want to be a lawyer. And so when I finished uni, I started just doing, you know, random admin bits just to make ends meet. So I ended up working in a hospital for 4 years. And it was, you know, I'm not qualified in writing or anything like that. I actually sometimes do find writing quite stressful for me. Because sometimes and maybe this is the imposter syndrome talking, but sometimes I feel like I'm too informal to be like a proper journalist. And so sometimes when I'm trying to write something very serious, it can take me a couple of days because I feel like I then compare myself to other journalists and other writers and who are so eloquent in the words that they use. And I'm here just, you know, using very basic words for things. And so sometimes I feel as if I don't measure up to the standard, but then when I hear that people have been inspired by my work, it kind of lets me know, oh, maybe there is a talent there.
But it's kind of almost a sense of healing because you talk about sharing your vulnerabilities at school and actually being attacked for that and being abused and being demoralized. And then you talk about sharing your vulnerabilities or your views or who you are online. And each time building up a little bit of trust with the audience because they're giving you a completely different feedback from what the younger you got at school. And it does illustrate that journey of, you know, all the cliches of just be yourself, own it. You know, it's all right for an inspirational quote, but then the reality of really doing that is quite risky.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always go well and it's quite scary. But I suppose your journey illustrates how you found a sense of freedom, you know, not overnight, but dipping your toe in, gaining trust with people. And even your statement of, oh, I didn't want to do law. The first thought I had was, Well, how ironic, because now she defends people. Now she fights for people's rights. Now she tries to get justice. Now she tries to get the truth out there. And like you have touched on, a lot of it is a thankless task that doesn't always make you money, and it's for others. It's for the greater good. And like in some aspects, that's what some parts of law are, you know, and why might someone might go into law, because they care about that.
Exactly. Actually, that's actually the first time I've ever thought about it like that. That is so true. Yeah. So I guess one way
Stephanie's
or another,
law.
I've kind of, come back round to a full circle. Doing the law. But it's a tough one, because I think being vulnerable online already is, it opens you up to so much criticism and hate and trolling. And it's such a difficult thing to do, but for me, it is freeing, because I spent so much of my life inside my head. You know, even like when I was younger, I had an eating disorder, but I felt too embarrassed to tell people, because I knew that people's reaction would be, but you're fat, you can't have an eating disorders. Mm-hmm. That's only reserved for slimmer people, which is a complete lie. And so I even felt embarrassed talking about that. And so,
but I think we're only just at a place where there's always been empathy for anorexia and skeletal kind of, you know, we know those photos of skeletal people. And I think it's only recently now that people understand, you know, all types of self-harm and emotional eating and addictions. And it's a very new conversation, don't you think?
I think so. But I find it quite, I find it quite sad sometimes, because I think even with like the eating disorder, for me, what I was put on Weight Watchers, or I was put on a slimming group, if we're not allowed to say the name. I was put on a slimming club when I was like 12, and that taught me very disordered eating. So for about 3 years, I didn't allow myself to eat more than 800 calories. Mm-hmm. And if I did, I would, if I felt like I'd eaten a lot, I would throw it up. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was normal. And this carried on until I was about 24. I went out of my way to try and lose as much weight as possible. So that was through restrictive eating, fasting, buying illegal diet pills online, using laxatives.
So bad for your body.
So bad for your body. But all these things, as I was getting smaller, people were congratulating me on it, and they didn't know that I was and they didn't know that I was hurting my body. And so when I was getting these rewards from people, it encouraged me to do it even more. And so, you know, with that, because I exist in a fat body, you don't see the eating disorder. You just see somebody that's doing well and, you know, losing weight. And so all of these factors, I think it's so important to talk about in the mainstream, because not a lot of people, I feel, you know, are so raw with their fails. I think with social media, we're so used to documenting our wins and showing the lovely sides of what society has, but it's so important to also, I think, show the downsides, because not only does it, you know, make you more relatable and human, but you never know who you could be helping with one Instagram post. You know, for me, I remember like a week ago or a week or two ago, I uploaded a picture on Instagram about with my inner thighs, and that kind of went viral, because a lot of like plus size women, or women in general who have darker inner thighs, never speak about it, because it's seen as something that is so gross, and people think it's unclean when really it's just hyperpigmentation. And the messages that I got from women saying thank you for being so honest and upfront and raw about, you know, your, you know, areas of your body that are darker than the other, like it's really helped me and made me feel not alone. You know, at the time I didn't know that that blog post would go on to like help so many people. To me, it was just me just showing off that I could do the splits, really. And it just turned into something completely different, which has been really lovely. And so there is so much power in showing your vulnerability, I think. And it's so freeing, especially if you've grown up having everything inside and suppressing.
Well, it's interesting, because it kind of encapsulates a couple of questions I had for you, because I thought, well, the book's so much around self-acceptance, and really that gives you such a wide readership, because whoever we are, we want to work on our self-acceptance. And just the title, Fattily Ever After, and in this interview, hearing you use the word fat, it feels like you've got ownership, you're assertive, you're sure in your language, you're definite in your language. And I wondered if self-acceptance is something you still struggle with Because, so say for me, like I felt I was in danger of becoming this poster girl for always being happy and positive and okay with everything, appearance and the past and all these things. And that for some people, body positivity is saying, I love what I look like no matter what. And I used to think, well, I don't really fit into that because some days it's just enough for me to feel neutral and accept it.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean I feel pretty or I like it. It's just a permanent way I look. So I just have to get on with it. Yeah, of course, yeah. There's euphoric moments when I feel attractive and that's great, but it's certainly not every day. My everyday existence is just neutral and like I can get on with it. It's not like celebratory, you know, flower on my boobs, naked, swinging off a tree, do you know? And I just wondered, like, do you practice self-acceptance every day?
I think, do you know what? I try to. I know that there is definitely a part of body positivity that is quite, it's quite radical. So they're very much, you know, you have to be happy all the time, you have to be happy. And I think where that comes from is the fact that being in a fat body is seen as so unacceptable that we don't have any kind of societal privilege at all. You know, especially when you're on the larger end, you are constantly every day subject to criticism from your family, your friends, from TV. You have to wake up and see, watch on TV, you know, people saying that they find your body grotesque and that they'll never want to look like you. Walking in the street, having people taking pictures of you to use as memes. There was a point where I couldn't really go to restaurants and eat because people would be sneakily taking pictures of me while having their flash on accidentally. People not sitting next to you on public transport.
If someone took a picture of you like that, what would you do? What do you confront them? Do you pretend it's not happening? What's your?
It's happened a couple of times. So there was one where I was, we were outside and there was a guy and a group of mates, and they were like, they had like their phone. He had like his phone like quite hidden, but then he took the picture and it went off, and I kind of just stared at him and made him feel really uncomfortable until he just left and went to a different table. But I'm still not at that point where I feel like I can be that confrontational about it yet. Mm-hmm. I think you just constantly have to be wary and on edge, mm-hmm. especially in public, about your appearance. Because if you're not wary, somebody else will always remind you of how awful they think you look. So, yeah.
It's interesting you're talking about, you know, where we're at, and obviously, you know, where we are at the moment is like lockdown's easing, you know, people are trying to go back to this, some kind of like pre-corona life. And I wanted to read a tweet to you. You probably have heard about this already. It's a tweet from a TV show and it went viral. They were asking the audience, right? And they said, should schools weigh pupils to make sure they shift the extra pounds they put on during lockdown? And there was this thing, like they and because again, this conversation around obesity and corona, and this was a genuine question on Jeremy Vine's debate yeah. show. I mean, you even look exhausted with me asking you the question. Like, what do you think?
I retweeted it and I said, "Are you insane? Are you absolutely insane? How on earth can you propose that question to weigh school kids, probably in front of their peers, mm-hmm. that will open them up to a world of bullying and comparisons. And when kids are at that age, look, I remember it, like, you are so impressionable, you will be told that you look, you know, a certain way, and then the lack of eating or the controlled eating can turn obsessive to the point where, like me, I restricted myself to 800 calories and did not eat or tried not to eat over that. I think it's so toxic and so harmful to even suggest that kids should start to be aware of their weight at such a early age, but it's the intrusiveness of it mm-hmm. as well. Like, I think it's an absolutely terrible idea. And the fact that they even thought of that question to ask. I think they kind of knew what they were doing. They wanted to go viral.
Yeah, they did, but they weren't scared, you know, because that's where we're at now, that actually, you know, you're talking about the intrusiveness, that actually people feel entitled to discuss people like that, discuss others. And I suppose this is what really kind of reminds us why books like your book is so important. And we want it to be number one in the Sunday Times bestseller list in September.
Oh, the dream!
You know, you do inspire lots of people, and for me, like, you give me hope, and being a role model comes with lots of responsibility. I wondered, who are your role models?
Yeah, growing up, I didn't have a role model. I didn't see anybody that looked like me, that, like, on TV and things like that. I didn't have anybody to connect to. I have had, and you know, I don't mean for this to sound arrogant by any means, but I've really had to, you know, rely on myself to be
best
version of me. I've had to kind of do everything by example. However, last year, I think when I met Lizzo for the first time, I burst into tears, right, and I was shaking. I remember, because I was like, this is the person that I needed to see growing up. I needed to see somebody like Lizzo, somebody who was so unapologetic in her fatness and her blackness. She's loud.
And she's takes sexy up stage. As well.
She's sexy, she's talented, she's hilarious. She is singing and dancing and playing the flute and twerking on stage for 2 hours every day. Mm-hmm. Like, she has made me feel like I could do anything. So I've even started singing again. Like, I do it in the comfort of my flat.
I do it
in the comfort of my flat. You know, I belt out a Hamilton tune every now and again.
This is what Hamilton. We should have got on the podcast. This is the content we want. You singing.
Oh, I love a bit of Hamilton. So, you know, her just doing all of these things and wearing all of these outfits and, you know, even inspiring some of the really big fashion houses to start making plus size, that we've never seen anything like that.
She's
before.
High end. And she's very fashionable, you know, her outfits.
Fashionable. And she is an icon to so many young girls. And I'm so happy that there are going to be little young black fat girls growing up seeing her as, you know, this something to aspire to and something to tell them that, you know, you don't have to be what society, you know, the box that society puts you in. You don't have to be like that.
Well, it's that whole like old fashioned saying of you can't be what you don't see. And I suppose for a lot of people, they now see themselves because of her. How did you actually get to meet her? What's the story?
This is so pathetic. So basically, I've been a huge fan of hers for ages, and I was kindly invited last year by her record company to come and see her perform in Mayfair. Basically, what happened was she was singing Juice, one of her like high octane songs, and so everybody was singing and dancing and twerking, and I was in the back just staring at her, not believing that there was this plus size black woman who was doing this. And I burst into tears, and one of her one of the people on her record label sort of saw me just in tears, and she came up to me and she was like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just so overwhelmed with like pride, and you know, this is such a huge moment for plus size black women. Like, we've never seen anything like this before. And then she said, do you want to meet Lizzo after the show?
I'd be like, I can't, no.
I was like, my heart just stopped. I was like, excuse me, what? And then I was able to meet her, and I went in just shaking. It was like seeing Santa Claus for the first time. I was like shaking, and then I saw her, and then she was like, hi. And then I lost it. I cried. I was like ugly crying. And then she told me that she somehow knew who I was because she'd read that article on the date on the date that I was on. Right. So she was like, oh, you're the one that wrote that Refinery 29 article. And I was like, the queen knows who I am. Oh my God. And it was just one of the best days of my life. Just seeing somebody that represented all the things that I wanted to do but was too scared to do, and seeing that it can be done. Oh, it's such an amazing feeling.
Well, do you know what? I think this is such a lovely thought to end the interview on, because when people pick up your book and read it, you are going to be that woman to those people. And for some people, closing that book and finishing it is going to be one of the best days of their life, and maybe the beginning of living their life and not just existing. So I really hope that you remember that. And, you know, you are Lizzo to lots of other women. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. What a compliment.
You are phenomenal. And this is why I wanted you on the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on and being you and just like being, sharing all that of us. Because, you know, I know what it's like sharing yourself. It's hard and it's tiring as well. So
it's all for the best, I think, at the end of the day. So thank you so much for having me on and having these really important conversations.
I feel like that could be the next book title. It's all for the best.
It's all for the best.
That's a good one, right?
That's really good, actually. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Casey Piper's Extraordinary People. If you haven't already, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed this, please help us spread the word. Rate and review the show where you got this, or share on socials.